I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday Friday. Free Blacks built the Ceres Bethel AME Church in Frederick County just a few years after the end of the Civil War. Its adjacent graveyard is the final resting place for some prominent Maryland African Americans of the 19th and 20th centuries. But the church has been vacant for 30 years. And since being used in the Blair Witch Project, that surprisingly popular indie horror film of 1999, it's become an attraction for various visitors and vandals. According to Preservation Maryland, if nothing is done to maintain it, Ceres AME doesn't have much of a chance of surviving. In this hour of midday, we'll hear about that old church and other important sites across the state in danger of being lost forever. First, the news. Welcome to Midday Friday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us in WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick in Hagerstown, WYPO in Ocean City, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. We thank you again for making Midday part of your day. Each year, Preservation Maryland, the nonprofit dedicated to preserving Maryland's historic buildings, neighborhoods, and landscapes, compiles a list of what it considers to be the most threatened statewide historic sites. These sites, for a number of reasons, could disappear if nothing is done to save them. That's the whole point of assembling this list. The annual list is called Endangered Maryland. And on it this year is the AME Church, Bethel AME Church, Ceres Bethel AME Church in Frederick County that we're going to talk about. Another location in Frederick County, an old tannery. And Baltimore's Morris Mechanic Theater, which we've discussed here on Midday before, is also on the list, made the list for a second time here in 2014. With me now for this hour is Margaret D. Archangelis. Margaret is the Education and Outreach Director for Preservation Maryland and took that position this year. Nice to have you on the show, Margaret.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we look forward to doing this each year to at least point out, well, you always learn something, of course, during this hour because you and your organization take us to locations that a lot of us have no awareness of here in our state. And then, you know, you point out the significance of these sites and why we should consider preserving them.
Yeah, and that is exactly the reason that we have this list, is to show the diversity of the historic resources across the state, as well as bring these sites that are threatened to different to people's attention.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the Bethel AME Church, Ceres, mm-hmm. C-E-R-E-S, Bethel AME Church. I thought this was very interesting. And if you get a chance, folks, and go to my Facebook page or go to the website of Preservation Maryland, you can see photographs of all these locations. Yep. And the photograph of Ceres Bethel AME Church out there in the woods somewhere in mm-hmm. Frederick County, if you're familiar with the Blair Witch Project, you might recognize it. That film from 1999, that little indie film, the found footage film that turned into a had quite a cult following and ended up with a $250 million box office. This church was abandoned by then and was used in that film, right?
Yeah, so the church was abandoned, I believe, in 1984. And since then, it hasn't had a congregation. So it's just been, the doors have been locked and the cemetery is still active. People are still being buried in there. But the church building itself is just sitting vacant and really in quite a sad state of disrepair. There's beehives inside of the shingles, and it really needs a lot of attention.
This goes back to a congregation that formed even before the Civil War, Free Blacks, in the late 1850s.
Exactly, yeah. They formed about 1858. They had a sizable congregation there and were able to purchase the land. And then sometime after the Civil War, around 1870, they were able to build the church. And so that's when the building dates from, and the graves in the cemetery date from 1870 through about 2012.
And you believe the church was used up until 1984, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, so since then it's just been abandoned. How do you track down who actually owns that property, owns the church?
Well, in that case, it is currently owned by the AME regional offices of the church. And so to find that kind of information out, you're going to use tax records oftentimes. But with that property in particular, I did look at some of the tax records. It's hard to find information on those sorts of properties because they don't have a street address. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of talking to people in the area and finding out what they know about the building so that then you can figure out who the owner might be.
We say Frederick County here. Can you pinpoint it a little bit for us in Frederick County?
It is Burkittsville is the name of the town.
That's where the Blair Witch Project was filmed. I should have known that. Okay. And it's been vandalized over the years. People who know the movie, the Blair Witch Project, have visited the site?
Yes. If you Google it online, you're going to find references to different ghost stories about the site and people who are out there looking for visions of ghosts and that kind of thing. So that sort of stuff does happen. And when people like that are visiting the site unescorted and are just, they oftentimes do vandalize the buildings.
It's not protected.
Exactly.
So what do you suggest here? What do we do in a situation like this? So I think almost all of us have been to places, traveled around Maryland and other states where you see an abandoned farm, abandoned church, abandoned schoolhouse, and wonder, what's going on there? Why isn't somebody taking care of that? And the answer usually has to do with money, but where do we start with Ceres Bethel AME?
Yeah. So the answer does have to do with money, and it's a lack of funding for certain properties. In this case, getting it secured, getting doors on it with padlocks so that people can't get in and destroy the interiors, getting the roof stabilized would all be first steps. And that would be something that either a community group, a friends organization, or the group that nominated this, which was the Frederick Preservation Trust, would be the group that would invest that initial funds to save the building and preserve it. And then in the future, it's finding a purpose for these buildings. Almost everything on this list, the reason that we're talking about them is that they no longer meet their intended purpose. There's no congregation for this building, and there hasn't been for a long time. So looking at what other options there are for this little building, a community center might be one example.
Or maybe a place that opens now and then for visitations by students, classes that go there to study, study Maryland during the Civil War, Maryland in the mid-19th century.
Exactly. There's a story to be told about the free black community that was there and that built this church. And so there is a lot of history to be told with that site.
So your hope would be in doing this, actually drawing attention to Ceres Bethel AME Church in Burkittsville, is to draw attention to its state and hope that a friends group forms and comes to its rescue.
Yep, or people join the Frederick Preservation Trust, which is a group that is very interested in this particular site.
Here's an important question. When Preservation Maryland puts together this list of endangered Maryland, one of the things you must consider is whether it can be saved, whether the building is too far gone or not. In this case, I'm assuming it could still be repaired.
It can, yeah. It is a wood structure, so there's deterioration there with termites and bugs and that sort of thing, but it can definitely be saved. Almost any building really can be saved. It's a matter of the time and the money that it's going to take.
Margaret D. Archangelis is our guest in this hour of Middays, Education and Outreach Director for Preservation Maryland, the nonprofit that each year comes up with this list of endangered Maryland. Now we're going to talk about the Morris Mechanic Theater. We're going to make a leap from mid-19th century Frederick County, Burkittsville, to Baltimore City, downtown Baltimore, and what was at the time the centerpiece of the redevelopment of Baltimore's downtown Charles Center in the 1960s, the Morris Mechanic Theater, which appears to be slated for demolition. It's been empty for a few years now, has not been used as a theater because it wasn't considered large enough to handle the big off-Broadway, though the Broadway productions that come through town. So let's talk about this one a little bit, Margaret. I know this was on your list before in 2009 because there was a concern about what was going to happen to the Mechanic.
Yeah, so we put the Morris Mechanic Theater on our list in 2009. And at that time, there were conversations going on about landmarking the building and providing that designation at the city level, which would protect the building and stop a future, either the current owner or future owners, from demolishing it without a very detailed conversation about why that was going to be happening. So,
Yeah, okay. So it didn't get the designation.
Right,
It
yeah.
wasn't protected.
Exactly.
Okay, now why should it be protected? What's special about the Mechanic Theater? For those who haven't seen it, again, you can find a photograph on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page provided by Preservation Maryland and their photographer, Edwin Remsberg. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the significance.
So the significance has to do with the history of the building. We can discuss style and people's idea of what is a good-looking building, and I realize a lot of people don't think that this one is.
It's brutalist architecture.
It is, at its finest, really. It is a classic example of brutalism. And the other type of architecture that it is functional expressionism is another way of defining it. And it's that is the idea that from the outside of the building, you can see what was supposed to be going on inside. When you look at it from the plaza area, not from Charles Street, where so many people view it, you can see the different spaces that would have existed inside of the theater. And so the reason that this building is so significant has to do with its history. It was built in 1967, and it was a response to the decline of downtown Baltimore, and it was the hope for the future of the city. And as we continue to talk about the redevelopment of downtown Baltimore and what our future is going to look like as we move through the 21st century, keeping a piece of that hope and optimism from the mid-1960s is a really important thing to do.
The architect was John Johansson. Now, a student of his was involved in this at some point, right?
Yeah, so one of his students was involved with creating some of the renderings of the possible options for the redevelopment of the site.
Okay, let's talk about that. Because, as I said, it's been abandoned as a theater ever since we moved to the Hippodrome for larger productions. So that's been several years now. It's in the hands of Arrow Parking. Mm-hmm. It owns it. A developer, David Brown, the developer, has been issued a demolition permit,
They were. The demolition permit was issued in March. And so right now that is an active demolition permit, which allows them to take down the building. Because it did not receive that landmark status, they can demolish it. There are some restrictions that come with that demolition. They cannot knock it down until they have a construction plan submitted with the city. So they need to have a clear idea of how they plan on moving ahead with the site.
Okay. Let's go back to those renderings for a moment, because I brought up Johansson's student who worked on this. Mm-hmm. So there was an interest, at least for a time there, on the part of the developer, the owner, of adaptive reuse, of like saving some of the elements of the brutalist design of Johansson in the new office or apartment building complex?
Yeah, I believe the residential tower is what they're looking to do, and then some mixed use in that lower level. And so when you walk down Charles Street past the theater, you'll see images on the side of the building that's covering up some of the concrete walls. And those are renderings of what they had proposed as a possibility for it. And it is an adaptive reuse project. It uses the shell of the Morris Mechanic Theater and then puts a tower that goes up through the middle. So you keep this important architectural structure, but you also adapt it to meet the needs of the current community.
Okay, so we know that there was at least an interest there, right? Mm-hmm. And it was expressed on the outside of the building, the facade. Do you know if any of that's going to happen? Is it still possible?
I believe it is still possible, to the best of my knowledge. What I've heard is that the developers have run into some problems with the parking underneath the building, and that has, so there is
concern about whether you can do it structurally.
Exactly.
Or pull that off.
Structural concerns, and so they have decided, instead of following through with that and trying to figure out a way to address those structural concerns, that it is better to not preserve that facade at all and build something
brand new. Not at all, huh? I mean, okay. I would think it's just as a homage to the era that you're talking about, to the theater and to what it represents in terms of Baltimore's history. There might be a way of saving some of the brutalist edges and angles that occur in the Mechanic Theater that are, you know, so distinctive.
Yeah, and there are definitely examples of that where pieces of buildings have been incorporated into new buildings. But on the other hand, you don't want to just save a facade to save it. There are there are a lot of things that you need to think about when you're trying to do an adaptive reuse project.
Mm-hmm. So adaptive, really, when you say adaptive reuse, means actually using the space.
Exactly.
And not just the facade.
Yeah. A building needs a purpose. They were built with a function and they need a job. And if they don't have a job, then they become decrepit spaces and they fall down and become threatened like all the ones that we're talking about.
To our listeners who've been in downtown Baltimore over the years and used to go to the Mechanic Theater, how do you feel about this? I wonder if it's worth putting up an effort to try to preserve the Mechanic Theater. How do you feel about it? It's a love-hate thing people have with that building. So I'll put out the phone number here, 410-662-8780. I also want to say that while Margaret is with us today, Margaret D. Archangelis from Preservation Maryland, if there's a location in Maryland you want to talk about that you wondered about, whether Preservation Maryland is aware of it or not, it's a threatened building, a location, even a landscape, please give us a ring during this hour of the show. 410-662-8780. We'd like to know how you feel about the Mechanic Theater as well. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. We're going to talk about an old tannery when we get back, an old tuberculosis sanatorium in Prince George's County, and the National Road, Route 40. We're going to talk about that as well. This is Midday Friday. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday. Before we move on from the Mechanic Theater, let's take a call on that, Margaret. Margaret D. Archangelis with us from Preservation Maryland as we go over the endangered Maryland list for 2014. John in Baltimore, thanks for calling Midday.
Yeah, hi, Dan.
Hi.
You know, there are three buildings in Baltimore that are really outstanding from an architectural standpoint, and that's because they were designed by world-class architects. One is the Basilica, which was designed by Benjamin Latrobe. The other is the World Trade Center, designed by Ian Pei. And the third is the Mechanic, designed by John Johansson. This is a building that's utterly one of the three best buildings in Baltimore. There should be no question about it being preserved.
Well, thank you very much for calling to say that, John. I assume it's not John Johansson. But anyway, when Klaus Philipson was on the show, the Baltimore architect who appears here from time to time, contributes to Midday, you know, he said that there are a lot of bad examples of brutalist design, brutalist architecture, but this is not one of them. This is one of the better ones.
Yeah, and I definitely do agree with that. In the research that I've been doing, it is clear that this was such a classic example, and a lot of other buildings were modeled off of this particular building.
So it is threatened with demolition. A petition to give Baltimore City landmark status to the building was denied. And in March, as Margaret said earlier, March this year, there's a six-month waiting period now on demolition expired, right?
Yeah.
So that means the developer or the owner can go ahead at any point?
Exactly. So that March demolition notice was the end of that six-month waiting period. Mm-hmm. And so as of March, they can go ahead with the demolition, but they do need to submit construction plans
before they move on. Okay. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here if you'd like to talk about that with us while Margaret is with us today. Before we leave Baltimore City, what if we talk about the Valve House in Clifton Park?
Absolutely.
You know, I'm looking at photographs of this, and I'm thinking, God, this is a beautiful building. And it was a valve house, meaning literally a valve for the flow of water from Lake Montebello into what was once upon a time Lake Clifton?
Yeah, exactly.
It
is a public works building, and it is...
It's beautiful. It's Gothic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Would you say Gothic?
Yeah, Neo-Gothic.
Neo-Gothic, okay. Mm-hmm. And it had stained glass once upon a time.
Yeah, and when you visit the site now, you can see a few shards of the stained glass up at the top. It's got those arched windows, which are a classic tell of a Gothic-inspired building.
Now, Clifton Park, that's the property once of Mr. Johns Hopkins, right?
It is his it was his farm, and his mansion is still there. Right now, Civic Works is restoring that mansion and uses that building for their programming.
Well, there's some good news, because the mansion is being restored.
Exactly. The mansion is being restored. The neighborhoods around the park are continuing to develop. People are moving into that neighborhood, and that park is such an asset to that area. And so seeing that Valve House again repurposed, it's no longer a Valve House. It hasn't functioned as that since the 1920s. So finding some new use for it, whether that's a farm stand or a cafe,
concert venue. I gotta read you this comment that came in on Facebook from Samantha. She says, I've always loved this space. Imagine it as a concert venue. Patterson does so well with its series by the Pagoda, meaning Patterson Park. Mm-hmm. She says, as a kid, I used to pass by the Valve House at Lake Clifton, and I'd think, I want to get married here, decrepit and all. But, you know, look at this space. You have a nice, beautiful shot of the interior of it, even though the roof is the roof has lots of holes in it. It's a great interior space.
Yeah, the tile roof is starting to collapse. It's got a steel truss structure to the roof, which was very innovative at the time, and that is starting to rust because of all the holes in the tile and needs to be shored up.
What occurs to me when I look at that, I say, this was a Valve House, right? This was part of public works. But apparently, city fathers and mothers were so proud of their public works, of this great water system. We do have a great water system, municipal water system, that they wanted to show it off. They wanted to celebrate it with this great architecture.
Baltimore had one of the earliest public water systems and still has a great water system. And so they invested that money to build that beautiful structure. And it was a destination. It was a place to go, and people could picnic on the grounds and all throughout the park.
That'd be a great place to have a concert. And Samantha, I'm with you. That'd be a great space for a wedding. I agree with you. Kim, calling from Whitehall, with a question about another part of the water system of Baltimore City. Kim, go right ahead, please. Hi.
Thank you. I'm wondering about the structure up in Roland Park. I believe it was to hold water. And I was told the only reason it's still standing is because the city doesn't have the money to tear it down. So I was wondering if it's preserved, if it's going to be torn down, or just what's happening with that structure. Thank you.
That is a site that we've put on previous endangered lists. And as of right now, I don't know of anything moving ahead with that site, but it is a really interesting building as well. And again, one of those monumental structures.
Has to be saved. If we can get some more information about the water tower in Roland Park, we'll pass that along to you. As of now, nothing's happening. It has a fence around it.
It does. And if anyone has sites that they want to bring to our attention that we might not know about, we're happy to take field phone calls and emails.
It's preservationmaryland.org, right? And you can find a link to it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Tanning in Maryland, not tanning salons, tanneries. Once upon a time, I learned from Preservation Maryland that tanning was second only to agriculture in terms of its economic importance in the state. And in Frederick County, what did I read here? 93 tanneries in Maryland, and half of them were located around the time of the Civil War in Frederick County. So Frederick County was a center for tanneries.
It was. This was a fascinating fact for me to learn as I was researching these properties. With the Byerly Tannery is the building that we are talking about. It's a tiny little white building with a smokestack located along Carroll Creek in downtown Frederick. It's in the midst of the historic district there. And it is the last vestige of tanning in the city of Frederick, an area that was booming with tanneries for many, many years throughout most of the 1800s.
Now, and why was that? Because it was central to in Maryland, Frederick? Because of its location, because of the number of creeks that flowed through Frederick County?
Yeah, the water supply is very important
for the
with
mills,
tanning.
Mm-hmm. For the tanning mills, yeah. The Byerly, by the way, is B-I-R-E-L-Y. And I note here from Preservation Maryland that the family, this goes back to, the early 19th century, actually turn of the 18th into the 19th century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not the building, but the family that ran it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they were there, I think, starting...
It says 1800.
Okay. And
1800 to 1924, this tannery was operated by the Byerly family in that location. So it's sitting there. It's in a historic district in Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a plan for it? And what's the threat to it?
The threat to it is the construction, or the threat is demolition. So right now, the city of Frederick is looking to build a convention center and a hotel. And that spot where the tannery sits, it doesn't have very many buildings right around it, and is right along the creek, has been slated as one of two possible spots for the construction of this conference center.
Okay. So the significance, this is an industrial site, right? Mm-hmm. So are those harder to sell for preservation in Maryland, industrial sites?
Industrial sites are a little harder to sell, but throughout that whole area and that spot on Carroll Creek are many, many warehouses that are filled now with antique shops. So people have found those buildings useful and found ways of repurposing them.
I note that another industrial site in Dundalk, the old Seagram's distillery, which has been empty, the former Seagram's distillery in Dundalk, is slated to become townhomes now. The Sollers Point Road property, that's where it's located, which hasn't been used as a whiskey distillery since the early 1990s, has been the scene of problems in recent years. I think they've had fires and, people go into the property. I think a couple of people have been injured in the property. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that one's slated to become townhomes. You can't save all these industrial sites.
You can't save all of them, and not all of them are big enough to turn into a residential property. This is a very small building that we're talking about.
The Byerly Tannery.
So incorporating that, though, if they do go ahead with the hotel there, incorporating it into the building in some way. And it seems like it would be a really interesting place for a restaurant. Tanning and in slaughter of
or
cows. And
a tanning salon? No. Well, I mean, I think the reason you want to save it is because of its significance to Frederick's history.
Mm-hmm.
There once was a lot of tanning going on in Frederick County, and it was the center of it in Maryland. So you want to save one last piece of it. That would be the Byerly Tannery. Dan Roderick's here on Midday with Margaret D. Archangelis from Preservation Maryland. We're going over the Endangered Maryland list. If you want to contribute to it, if you want to nominate a place, by the way, all these locations were nominated to Preservation Maryland, and then you decided the final list based on the nominees, right?
We do. So we accept nominations starting in late fall. The nomination will be available on endangeredmaryland.org, which is the site where we keep all of the information about endangered properties. It's a brand new site that we've just got up and running. So nominations will be available there. We'll accept them through the beginning of February. And then we have a panel of preservation experts, people involved in the field, academics, all different sorts of preservation folks that we bring together to make the final selection.
Margaret, do you have a special project going on tobacco barns in Maryland?
We have. It's a project that we've wrapped up in the last few years, but in the early 2000s, we focused a lot of our attention on the tobacco barns.
And we've saved some.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And can you point to another success story before we go on with the present list here? I'm just curious, over the last, 5 to 7 years of doing this, is there a site or location that's enjoyed some preservation since your list?
There have. So the one that jumps to my mind is Washington Grove down in Montgomery County. That was on last year's site. It is a former Methodist camp. Folks would take the train out from D.C. and spend a week or so at a time out at this camp. And the cottages that were part of that remain there on that site, and they've been turned into private homes. So it's a very special place with walking paths throughout, and all the buildings face in towards a community center area. And last year, they were under threat and put on the list because of development pressures that were going on directly next door to the community. It was going, an apartment building exists there now, and they wanted to raise the 3-story apartment building and build something like an 8-story apartment building that was going to impact the experience within that community. It was going to rise way above the tree line.
Hmm. Oh, so what part is the success then?
Oh, so
the apartment building?
Sorry, the success is that the zoning was not changed to allow for the new apartment building.
Okay, that's
so
what
they
I thought
kept
you were gonna
the
say.
Yeah.
That's good.
They kept the current arrangement, which everyone is pleased with.
Washington Grove in Montgomery County. So let's switch over to Prince George's County then, because this is a good segue to Glendale Tuberculosis Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of amazing to me, and I'm looking at the photograph. It makes me want to visit this place. It's 23 brick buildings, Georgian Revival buildings, on this located in Prince George's County. It used to be a sanatorium, Glendale Tuberculosis Hospital and Sanatorium.
Yeah, so the hospital was built by the District of Columbia to take care of the tuberculosis patients. In the early part of the 1900s, there was a lot of tuberculosis, and it was a very big concern for the population in D.C. Anytime you've got close quarters, it is a concern, and so they wanted to get people who were infected out. And the idea was to put them into a more pastoral setting, out in a rural area where they can enjoy the benefits of fresh air. And so this District of Columbia developed the Glendale Sanitarium, and that was starting in about 1933.
It's quite extensive, 23 buildings, 1933 to 1959, and it remained an active hospital through 1982.
It did, yeah. And after that time, it's been had its doors shuttered pretty much since then. It is a huge campus. About 60 acres of it are developed with these brick buildings that we've talked about, but there's about another 150 acres to the site that are undeveloped and are really still the rolling hills and the park-like setting that was intended for the patients.
What's the state of the buildings?
The buildings are in pretty bad shape right now.
But they are brick.
They are. They are brick, which definitely means that they can stand the test of time a lot better. The property is currently owned by the Maryland National Capital Park and Planning Commission, and they are in the process of doing a safety evaluation for the site. The buildings have not been maintained over the last few years because there was concerns that the maintenance personnel could be harmed by even being on the grounds from
because of the roofs?
Falling bricks and pieces of roof and things like that. And so the buildings haven't been maintained, but it is important that they even just be mothballed, which would mean locking all the doors and shuttering them in such a way that they can stand the test of time for a few more years until a developer can be found for that.
So if you could at least do that, you might have a shot here. Okay, adaptive reuse, right? I mean, brick buildings, 23... brick Georgian Revival buildings that aren't too far gone yet.
Absolutely.
What could you see there?
Well, there are a couple of hopes from the nominating organization, which is the Glendale Civic Association. Their main focus is to make sure that that campus-like setting stays in that area. And so what that would mean would be maybe a continuing care facility or a retirement community, which there are not a lot of in that area. It could be an educational complex of some sort or even a business campus. There's one example in Montgomery County of a really interesting campus that comes to mind, and that's the National Park Seminary, which has been developed as a residential neighborhood. And that had many different kinds of buildings built in many different architectural styles that they have been able to save those historic buildings and also build the new buildings that were needed to make it a large enough complex that all the money balanced out in the end. There's also a great example in Traverse City, Michigan, of an asylum that has been converted into restaurants and shops and residential space.
So what would you need to pull that off? You have to get a developer interested, right?
Mm-hmm.
A developer is interested in preservation and probably some tax inducements of some kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the developer, wouldn't you need that? Or maybe grants of some kind?
Grants would be great. Hmm. The tax credits would be good. This building was listed on the National Register a few years ago, National Register for Historic Places, and it also just recently, in the middle of June, received designation as a Prince George's County Historic District.
So gotta help a developer, right?
Exactly. So those designations make it easier to get historic preservation tax credits, which are a key part anytime that you're trying to develop a big complex such as this one.
Did it look to you like most of the complex could be redeveloped? I keep mentioning those 23 buildings. Is it possible for all of them to be included?
It is. There are five that are the key buildings and the largest buildings that would really be the most important to be saved, but there is a possibility for all of them to be saved. With this kind of site, it's going to be a public-private partnership because right now it is owned by a government entity. And so one option would be giving a long-term lease to a developer who could then, they don't have to invest the money in purchasing, they can invest the money in developing.
That's a potentially very exciting project. Glendale Tuberculosis Hospital Sanatorium. Little town I grew up in Massachusetts, had a lake, well, really, an overgrown pond. But there was a tuberculosis facility there and cottages that were not preserved, but I've seen them in photographs. I mean, hundreds of people stayed in this place in that era that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Margaret D. Archangelis with us from Preservation Maryland. We'll continue to go over the list of endangered Maryland. You can join us if there's a property or a location somewhere in the state that you want to bring to Margaret's attention while she's with us. Give us a ring, 410-662-8780. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Dan Rodericks here, meeting for the first time. Margaret D. Archangelis, the new Education and Outreach Director for Preservation Maryland. I got to go to the Hyattsville Library. I got to see the Hyattsville Library. I've never seen it in person. I just saw a photograph today. Yeah, it's like the day the Earth stood still. It's like a spaceship hovering over a library. What a great story this is. What a great looking place this is. This is real space age stuff. I mean, literally. This is from 1964. Mm-hmm. Describe it and tell our folks about this, would you, Margaret?
So this is mid-century modern at its best. It is a fairly small building. When you drive past it on the street, it's set far back. It is a shorter building, and then sitting out in front of it, you have to walk underneath a space...
Flying saucer.
A flying saucer, exactly, yeah. To enter the building. The photographs.
It's big, too. I mean, it's like the day the Earth stood still. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
it's got a dome in it, right?
Yeah, there's a plexiglass dome in the middle so that the light can shine in as you're walking in. And this building just speaks so much to the interest in the space race that was going on in at that time. 1964, that is what everyone's focus was on. And with the Goddard Space Center so nearby, it was a very important topic for that area.
The space race, and dedicated in the memory of President Kennedy in March of 1964. Mm-hmm. So why is it on your list, though? I mean, it's still an active library, is it not?
It is still an active library. It was also the first library that the county built as for the purpose of being a library. And it is on the list because there are concerns about its demolition. The county, the library is not meeting the needs of the community as well as it once did. When it was built, it was the best in library technology. But now lighting is not up to standards. There's internet and connectivity issues that need to be dealt with for any kind of new library. And so there had initially been some talk of rehabbing the building, and then the county wanted to instead just demolish it. But I learned just recently that they are in the process, an architectural firm is in the process of doing a feasibility study, and they are now having public discussions about the building and have come to find out how much people in that area cherish having their flying saucer in front of the library.
Yeah, I mean, it's so distinctive. So there is hope that they can do a renovation rather than building a new library.
Exactly. They're trying to find out if they can rehab the building and build onto it to meet the needs of the community, or they're looking at all kinds of different options, which is really great. And everyone hopes that they can preserve the flying saucer and the
Plan
whole building,
9
really.
From outer space, man. It's Independence Day. It's the day the Earth stood still. I have to go down and stand underneath that someday. Let's take a phone call here. John in Baltimore, you're on Midday Friday. Welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to thank Preservation Maryland for listing the Valve House in Clifton Park in this year's review of endangered buildings. It is so apropos that it's listed at this time, given the improvements to Clifton Mansion. The public would be able to see the Valve House from the perspective of the Clifton Mansion tower top. If they come to visit the mansion and see the renovations done, there'll be a variety of public activities at the mansion, which is just 100 yards away from the Valve House. And October 11th is going to be a big bash at the mansion. Would be a great time to get to see the Valve House up close.
Hey, John, would you send us a reminder about that as October 11th approaches?
I'd be happy to do that.
All right. Thank you very much for that call. And October, also, Margaret, we want to mention, in regard to the Morris Mechanic Theater, we'll go back to that subject for a moment. There's going to be an architectural salon of some kind to discuss it?
There will. So the nomination for the Mechanic came to us from the American Institute of Architects Baltimore chapter, as well as the Baltimore Architecture Foundation, and they will be doing a panel discussion on October 21st, and they'll be discussing the Mechanic Theater as well as Brutalist architecture.
Okay. Could you get us some more information about that? We'll pass that along.
Absolutely.
To our listeners who might be interested. Mac is interested. Mac writes to us from Mount Washington with regard to the Mechanic Theater. He says, in the past few years, millions have been spent to revamp the Hippodrome and Everyman Theater. A former office club has been converted to the Shakespeare Theater, and a former car repair shop is being converted to a theater in Remington. Why can't one of these theater companies use the Mechanic? It may no longer serve for traveling Broadway shows, but it is such a terrible building that it can't, but it is not such a terrible building that it can't function as a theater or music venue. I suspect that this is more of a question of finance, that the property is more valuable as a parking lot than as a theater. Well, it's more valuable, certainly, as a residential, as apartment building, maybe. Could we accomplish the goal of preserving the building by subsidizing a theater company to perform in that space or pay a promoter to book it as a music venue? We could save the building and we could use the art. Well, I don't want to say anything is too late, but, I mean, we're past the point where the city could have designated that an historic landmark and would have gone a long way toward preserving it, right?
Yes, we are past that point, and so it would be up to the developer to decide that they want to keep that building as a theater, or really the owners.
So you got to bring the case to the owners, mm-hmm. Arrow Parking and the developer, David Brown.
Yes.
A question from Vince in Linthicum. He's wondering about Fort Carroll, Fort Armistead, Fort Howard. Are they worth preserving? Is there any talk about their historic significance?
Well, Fort Carroll was on our Endangered Maryland list last year. We put it on there because we did think it was worthwhile to talk about preserving that site. The other two sites I'm not as familiar with.
We should tell people about Fort Carroll, just to remind, in case you don't know. When you go over the Francis Scott Key Bridge, if you dare to look down, it's right there near the Francis Scott Key Bridge. It was Robert E. Lee was involved in its the engineering and design of it and its construction. This was, of course, before the Civil War. And I used to go fishing out near there, and the herons have taken over. It's quite a heron rookery now.
It is. There were some peach trees that were planted on there at some point in time in the middle of the last century, and they have taken over, as have a lot of other greenery, and the birds now call it home.
Let's take another call. Jerome in Baltimore, you're on with Margaret DeArchangelis. Go right ahead, Jerome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to offer two buildings that might be candidates for consideration. One is the Philadelphia Christian Church on Minnesota. It's perhaps the best example of what we call googie architecture in the city.
On Minnesota Avenue?
Yeah.
Okay, Minnesota Avenue. All right, thank you.
There's one more. The second one is the Lock Raven Baltimore County Public Library.
Well, let me picture that for a minute. The Lock Raven Baltimore County Public Library.
Yes, it's nestled into the woods, and it's off of Taylor Avenue. And it's a really nice example of 1960s, 1970s modern architecture.
Is it endangered in any way?
It was rumored to be at one time. In the 1990s, there was the thought that Baltimore County would tear it down. That was said to not be true by the county. But it's something that's sadly ignored. I think it's a great example of modern architecture.
Thank you for mentioning those, Jerome. Appreciate the call. Margaret's taking notes. Margaret, I want to talk about two other places. I don't want to leave out the National Road, Route 40. Let's spend a moment on, let's talk about that. That's very interesting that this is on your list. This is the part of the original National Highway system, right?
Mm-hmm. The National Road was the portion from Cumberland west to the Ohio River was authorized by Congress in 1806. And shortly thereafter, by about 1810, they realized the need to extend the road out. And so that's when work started to run the road from Baltimore out to Cumberland. And it was really a they stitched together a number of private roads that were owned that connected that whole area.
And so why is it on your list?
It is on the list because the threat to this road, and it is the whole road, because all along there are such wonderful historical pieces that we want to preserve, things such as mileposts, and there are little stone mileposts that are down right at the ground that are a little hard to see when you're driving by, but if you go for a walk are really interesting to catch. There are toll houses, hotels, taverns, all different kinds of buildings along that road that speak to the history of the road and the different periods of development of the road.
Are those buildings that you just mentioned, are some of them still being used or are they abandoned?
Some of them are abandoned. Some of them are used. There's the toll house in LaVale comes to mind, and that one serves as a museum. But there are other buildings that are threatened and may be demolished as development pressures impact along Route 40 and push in.
The National Highway, the original National Road, mm-hmm. right? So you want to see what the state, maybe the state legislature take this up here in Maryland and say, let's brush this up a little bit. Let's draw people's attention to it in some way.
It would be great if the legislature did that. It is designated as a national byway, so it has that national designation to it. But funding is always a big problem with any historic site.
Oh,
and
sure.
So looking for
grants. But there's
grants.
Some simple things you could do, right? Mm-hmm. Like you say, you mentioned these stone markers, for mm-hmm. instance. You could take better care of them. How much would that cost? I mean, there's some things it sounds like you could do for minimal cost and draw people's attention to it.
Exactly. Because the stone markers are right at the grass level, indicating that they're there somehow so that people know, making sure that the lawnmowers don't drive over them and the big trucks don't crush them.
Or how about a tavern, maybe that's now a liquor store someplace on Route 40. Maybe that there's no awareness of the significance of the building, and maybe, or it could be designated some way so that tourists, people who drive through would know that, right?
Yeah, and people stop all the time to read those placards on the side of the road, but I also find that putting information inside of a building, so if you're in a liquor store buying something and there's a little sign as you're waiting at the cash register, you might take a moment to read that sign and pay attention to the history of that site.
Who knew Pulaski Highway had historical significance, right? Home of Big Al's Pit Beef and Chaps, right? But that's true, though. That's the National Road. 500... The 500 block of Race Street, R-A-C-E Street, in Cambridge.
Yes. So this is the end of the Main Street area in downtown Cambridge. It's a building. The buildings on the even side of the street are in pretty good condition and are occupied with shops. But on the odd side of the street, there are four big buildings. One was a wholesale grocery store, one was a warehouse, and one was originally a theater. And those buildings, one of them was damaged by arson, and some of them have just been damaged through the test of time and people not maintaining them.
Now, nearby in Cambridge, I haven't been there in a little while, but this seems to me like there's an arts and entertainment district down there, right?
Yeah, they are a designated Main Street.
Yeah.
They have an arts and entertainment district.
And there's been some preservation, right?
Yep. And one of the sites that was on our endangered list the first year, 2007, the Wallace Office Building, I just got a call yesterday that there's money being invested into that property. So it's going to be safe. So there is a lot of good things that are going on in Cambridge. And this building needs to be a part of that development.
Okay. And part of this section of the street that you're talking about, is that there's a theater there, right?
There is. The Tolley Theater.
T-O-L-L-E-Y?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And was that a movie theater or what was
it?
Yeah,
1920s movie theater. So this block is really interesting because it shows the progression of Cambridge. The buildings start about 1905, 1915, 1920, and they increase in terms of their decorative style and the opulence of the buildings. Even though we're still talking about warehouse buildings, there's a lot more decoration on them. And so it shows the increasing prosperity that was happening in Cambridge throughout that time.
These main streets the main street projects around the country are working out some places, many places, and some places maybe not so much.
But they're you know, people realize that there's economic cultural value to reviving these main streets. So maybe it'll happen in Cambridge again. Thank you very much, Margaret, for being here. We're out of time. I really enjoyed this hour, though, and learned things from you. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. This has been great.
Margaret D. Archangelis with Preservation Maryland. Again, we've been going over the list of endangered Maryland. I think you'll enjoy seeing these photographs and reading this history. So go to preservationmaryland.org or the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. We have some of the photographs up there on the page. Thanks again, Margaret.
Thank you.
And enjoy the pizza. We have pizza provided every Friday by Joe's Squared Pizza. Joe's Squared is located at 133 West North Avenue in the Station North neighborhood and at the Inner Harbor at Power Plant Live. And you can find them on the web at joesquared.com. Thanks to you guys over there at Joe's Squared for the delicious pizza. Stay tuned for the second hour of Midday, folks. Hope you enjoyed this one. We'll see you after the news.